1934, during the height of the Depression, it's the story of some African Americans living in a tenement in the South. And that's Porgy singing, "I've got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I got no car, got no mule, got no misery. Folks with plenty of plenty, they got a lock on their door, afraid somebody's going to rob them while they're out making more. What for? I got no lock on the door, that's no way to be. They can steal the rug from the floor, that's okay by me, because the things that I prize, like the stars in the skies, are all free. No use complaining. No use complaining. Got my gal, got my Lord, got my song. Oh, yeah, got my gal, got my song, got my Lord. Oh, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I got the sun, I got the moon, got the deep blue sea. The folks with plenty of plenty got to pray all the day long. Seems with plenty, you sure got to worry how to keep the devil away." So the Gershwin brothers didn't know it, but they were pretty good theologians. And if you ever get a chance to see any of the George and Ira Gershwin shows on television or at a play, they're great. American in Paris, that music is theirs. And they did many, many great things. Well, Porgy there, he expresses contentment with really having nothing. And that's not something we do in our lives in Western culture, certainly, and really just about anywhere these days. We want something, and we think something's going to make us happier. That's not what Porgy says. But let's look at, I can bring it up here. Let's see if I get the right one. Oh, that's not the verse I wanted, but I will come back to that. Nope, not that either. Not quite yet. Paul, and we'll get to this verse in its completeness later, but Paul in Philippians says, "I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances." I think the key word here is learned. Just because you become a Christian doesn't make you content. Just because you grow up in a family that has stuff doesn't make you content. You have to learn contentment. And for those of you that have young people in your house, I encourage you to teach contentment. Here's a little bit about what Charles Spurgeon, the great preacher, said back in an 1860 sermon. Paul, and we know this, was a very educated man. He was a Pharisee. Spurgeon says that the knowledge that Paul has, this knowledge is a greater knowledge than what is learned in school and more useful. Spurgeon goes on to say, you know, great scholars accumulate great volumes of information, but it's not all that useful. He says they study the dead languages, Latin and whatever. He goes, but that's not useful. This is useful knowledge. He goes on to say, contentment is not the natural tendency of men or women. We know that. You see little kids, they don't tend to be content with what they have. They can be happily playing 1 minute with their toy, but they see another kid with a toy and they want that toy. Mine, mine. They're not content. We are not naturally content. Spurgeon compares it to the weeds that grow naturally in our fields and in our gardens. That is discontentment. It's natural. It just comes up because we live in a fallen world. Greed, discontent, jealousy grow naturally like weeds. Ah, but the precious things like contentment must be cultivated like roses in gardens and farm fields. You know, so are we growing contentment in our gardens, or are we letting the weeds take over and grow? Again, Paul said he learned to be content, which is to say he was not always content. You know, you might say, oh yeah, Paul, he's sitting there when he wrote that letter to the Philippians. He's in a Roman prison. You know, that's just Paul. He's just a content guy. You know, some people are just content. I've heard people say that about me. Not so true. Not so true. Wasn't true about Paul. He learned it. In a couple minutes here, we're going to look at some scriptures. We're going to take a little trip through some scriptures and learn about being content. Contentment, though, is not just about finances. It's about all of our circumstances. It's about where we live. It's about our health. It's about, yes, our finances. It's about our relationship, about our education. Contentment is about every aspect of our lives, not just finances. So Paul, in that verse, was saying, I know what it is to have plenty, and I know what it is to have need. By the way, I'll talk about plenty may be a bigger problem than need. We think need's a big problem. I need, I don't have, might be clothing, finances. Having plenty can often be a bigger problem, and all you need to do is look at some sports stars or celebrities on the news, and you know that plenty causes more problem. Let's see, can we go to the photographs? Let's see. Nope. There we go. Oh, yeah. That is the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. Has anybody ever heard of the Waldorf Astoria in New York? Oh, quite a few of you. By many accounts, it's the greatest hotel in the world. The Waldorf Astoria is 49 floors on 50th Street in Park Avenue and 50th Streets in Midtown Manhattan. You can't have a better location in New York. 47 stories. It's an Art Deco landmark. This was actually the second building. The original building opened in the 1800s. This opened in 1931. It was the tallest hotel in the world for many, many years, until in the Soviet Union they built a skinny, tall one just to build a taller one. But it wasn't much. The Waldorf salad, if anyone's had that good salad with apples and stuff in it, Waldorf salad, was invented at the Waldorf Hotel. Many of the things we eat and take for granted were either invented at the Waldorf or were popularized there. Eggs Benedict, red velvet cake, Thousand Island dressing, the martini, though not invented there, because they were served at the Waldorf, people wanted to have those because that's what they had at the Waldorf Hotel. The luxury suites in the hotel are incredible. They're named for the celebrities who stayed there, like Cole Porter, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor suite, the Douglas MacArthur suite, because he lived in the hotel. The most expensive suite is the presidential suite. It's actually designed to mimic parts of the White House. And when Hoover was out of office from being president and retired, he lived at the Waldorf Astoria after his presidency for 30 years. A lot of famous people lived at the Waldorf because many of their suites are really like apartments. There's a private train platform right under the hotel so that wealthy people, especially if they had their own rail cars like they did back in the day, they didn't have to go to the Grand Central Terminal or to Pennsylvania Station in New York. Their rail car would be taken right underneath the Waldorf Astoria and they could go in their private elevator up to their suite. This was quite a hotel. I had the privilege of staying in that hotel with my dad. My dad liked to occasionally, as he would say, put on the dog. We were a family that would eat at McDonald's one day and eat at the best place in town the next day. My dad would save up and he'd say, okay, we're going to have a treat So for New Year's, we went to the Waldorf Astoria and stayed there. Back in the day, which most of you don't remember, there was a guy named Guy Lombardo. He was a band leader. The big thing on television was to watch Guy Lombardo celebrate New Year's Eve. It was bigger than watching the ball drop in New York City. That was the thing. So, of course, my dad said, we're going to New York. We're going to stay at the Waldorf. We're going to go. Let's see if I can get the next picture. There's one of the suites at the Waldorf. You know, nice little place. And we stayed in a suite up in the towers. Not quite that big, but we had a nice suite. There's the ballroom for New Year's Eve for Guy Lombardo. That was the biggest ticket in the country at the time. There's the ballroom, a postcard of the ballroom. It's three stories, by the way. The ballroom has the main floor and two floors of balconies overlooking it, and it was crowded for New Year's Eve, let me tell you. So Dad put on the dog. We stayed at the Waldorf. It was very exciting. The very next day after New Year's Eve, we were in the elevator, and we got stuck in the elevator with Guy Lombardo, who was the big band leader. So we had a private audience with him. It'd be like, I don't know who the big celebrity of the day is, but if just think of the big celebrity of the day, and you get to get stuck in the elevator with him. So that's an example of the plenty that I've experienced in life. Got to fly first class on Pan Am to London once. First class on Pan Am back in the day, there was nothing like it. It was fantastic. When you ate, they sat you at tables, not in your chair. You sat at a table and you had a menu to order from. But I've experienced the other side of life too. I've traveled on Greyhound buses, which is nothing like Pan Am, let me tell you. And yes, I stayed at the Waldorf, which is probably, at one time anyway, the greatest hotel in the world at the time. But I've more often stayed at this hotel, which some of you may be familiar with. I've stayed in several of their locations, and...
I'm a dweller, I'm a...
Yes, you know, the lobby is not quite the same as at the Waldorf. I couldn't find the ballroom or any of the dining rooms. They leave the light on for you, but there was no doorman, there was no valet, there was no bellman. There was a guy who said he was a bellman and would take my bags, but I didn't know if I'd get them back. That's probably been more of my experience. But I've had plenty and I've had want. And I'll tell you something, at night, I don't know if you can see that, but when you're asleep in a suite at the Waldorf Astoria, greatest hotel in the world, or when you're asleep in a room at Motel 6, that's what it looks like in either room. Can anybody tell me which hotel that is, by the way? Is that the Waldorf Astoria or the Motel 6? They're the same. So... you know, that taught me something about contentment. You want to see a great hotel? Go to the lobby of the Waldorf. You want to stay for something reasonable? Go stay at Motel 6. You'll sleep just as well, trust me, because I've stayed at both. So just as Paul said, I've had want and I've had need and want and I've had plenty, so have I. And that's life. But I am quite content with what I have, and that has been learned. The Lord has taught me a lot, but it has been learned. And before we go on, we'll go through some verses here about finding contentment, if you will. But I just want to talk, there is a high price to pay for discontentment. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish, harmful desires which plunge them into ruin and destruction. For the love of money, remember, it's the love of money, it's not money itself. For the love of money is a root of all sources of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced, that's a very strong word, and pierced themselves with many griefs. I don't think any of us wants to do that. So there's a price to pay for discontentment beyond just discontentment itself. I read this online from Learning Contentment from Crown Financial Ministries. Contentment is so far removed from many Christians that it seems they will never be able to find it or be at peace. However, contentment is not something that must be searched for and found. It is an attitude of the heart, and I'll say the heart and the mind. Once the attitude has been modified and all has been transferred to God, contentment will be evident. So, I'll leave that with you. Let's take a little journey through some scripture. God is the source of contentment. Your salary should not be your source of contentment, and your savings certainly not your source of contentment, because I'll tell you something. Savings come and savings go. Let me tell you about that in just a second. Don't put your confidence in something that can be taken from you. Look, there was a time that I worked at Countrywide with my good friend Robert, Mary's husband, for years. We both worked at the vice president level. I made good money. I was controlling every branch development activity, remodel, relocation, building of a branch for Countrywide in a 10-state area. And I made good money. Then we had the financial downturn, and Countrywide folded up and went away. And along with it, so did my job. And they found it very convenient to lay me off 5 weeks before my pension went into effect. So here I was working at America's, in fact, the world's largest mortgage banking corporation. More mortgages were held by Countrywide than anyone in the world. Plus, we serviced other mortgages and everything. You think you're at a place that is stable financially. And I had been recruited there, in a sense, and they had agreed to start my pension eligibility on a certain date instead of incrementally because I was leaving behind something at the other company. That's gone. And I spent several years, as some of you know, I took care of my grandmother, I took care of my mom, I took care of a dear friend named Gay Surway. And those savings that I had, which weren't a lot, because I thought, oh, well, I'm making good money. What's going to stop this? I work for the largest, you know, mortgage bank in the world. It's gone. 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 So don't put your confidence in something that can be taken from you. It wasn't really taken. I feel like my pension was taken, but the money, you know, that's what I was living on, and it's gone. Excuse me. Continuing, God is the source of contentment. And my God will supply all your needs according to his riches in glory in Jesus. Look, in Christ Jesus. Every once in a while when I'm flying, I heard this from somebody else. It's not mine originally, but they said it's a good way to witness to somebody. I liked having a captive audience when I'm flying because they can't get away and I'm going to tell them about Jesus. And I look out the window, and when you fly, you see those huge areas of land underneath them. And I just say, yeah, my father owns that. They were like, really? I go, yep. All that you can see. In fact, this whole flight, my father owns that. And they're like, what? Who are you? What are you talking about? My heavenly father. He owns it, he designed it, he created it. God has plenty, plenty of plenty to meet my needs. And even in the worst of times, God has met my need. It's sometimes hard to learn to trust in God because you feel like either you're a failure or you feel like you should be doing better for some reason, or you shouldn't be in this situation. Probably the best thing that ever happened to me was being on a roller coaster financially, because up here I didn't need God. Down here I did. So there's a purpose in it sometimes. But God has enough to meet your need. Do not worry then, saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing? For the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things. For your heavenly Father knows that you need these things. Sometimes I have to remind myself of that. The Lord knows what I need. He also knows what I want. And sometimes there's a little gap, but more often than not, there's a big gap between what I want and what I need. But remember, when you're praying, the Lord knows what you need. Pray to Him. Talk to Him. Express your need. He wants to hear from you. Express your needs to Him. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, where thieves do not break in and steal. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be. You know, rodents can get in and destroy too. I don't know if Karen wants me saying this, but I work in a very nice office in Encino. We're right across from Balboa Park, though. And recently, in our very nice, modern, contemporary office building, we found out we had a little visitor. He was chewing on boxes and getting into things, and he was a real rat. Absolutely a rat. And it doesn't matter if you're in a beautiful office building in Los Angeles. It doesn't matter where you are. Those things you store up, they can be destroyed. Some of you know that I was trustee for a house here in South Pasadena. And a little house, but a beautiful little house nonetheless. One morning around 4 o'clock, I got a call from a neighbor. Frank, the house is on fire. I thought, oh, it's just the kitchen or something. Rushed over there about 3 miles from my house. There were 14 fire engines when I got there. The house was gone. The front and side walls were there, but the roof collapsed. Over 140 boxes of books that were in the house, gone. The furniture in the house, gone. Everything. In fact, Mary and I had been over there just the day before, and we noticed that someone had left this nice rocking chair out on the driveway. And we thought, well, that shouldn't be there. I'm going to put it back in the house. Well, it burned up too. It was gone in an instant. It was a faulty, one of those old floor furnaces. So you can have nice things. God doesn't say don't have nice things. But just know they can be gone in an instant. And nothing we have here lasts. Our homes, you know, Bunker Hill in Los Angeles, where all the tall office buildings are now, was once the premier neighborhood in Los Angeles. If you were somebody, if you were anybody, you had a huge Victorian home on Bunker Hill. It's where all the wealthy people live. Do you see any of those homes there now? No, they're all gone. Every single one of them. A couple of them have been moved. They're over here in the Heritage area off the Pasadena Freeway. But even grand homes go away. So we need to remember where to store our treasure. Always remember to put God first before your treasure. It's a principle in all of life, not just your finances, in everything. When we put God first in our finances, we're saying three things, though. We're saying, I am grateful for all he has done for me in the past. Yeah, I got to stay at some great places and travel in some great ways and shop at some great stores. I'm very grateful that I had that. But that was for a time, and it was a fun experience. I think it makes me more grateful, actually, for what I have now, which is not quite the same. God is number one in the present. You're trusting God with your finances. You trust him for your past. Look, you may have been very wealthy in your past. You may have been very poor, but you're here right now. You made it this far. Trust him with your past. You made it here. Trust him with the present. Trust him with what you have in your pocket right now. And if you can do that, you can trust him for your future, certainly. You know, I'm at that point in life now, when I look in the rearview mirror, there's probably quite a few miles more behind me than there are in front of me. But for those of you that are younger, I can tell you, keep looking through the windshield, not the rearview mirror, but God's brought you this far. He's going to keep taking you further. Rest in the Lord. Make his priorities your priority, though. I'm not saying trust in the Lord that you're going to get the mansion in Malibu. Trust in the Lord that you're going to get the Ferrari. Trust in the Lord to meet your needs. He knows what your needs are. Be productive. You want to be content? Be productive. Being unproductive really leads to discontentment. Ask any guy who's out of work how discontent they are, because they don't produce anything. God wants us to be productive. We will find the most joy if we pay attention to how God has designed us and we use the talents and gifts he has given us. I am over the top joyed with the job I have right now. I feel that God is using my talents in ways that I didn't know would happen again. And I'm doing something I've never done before. I work where Karen worked, and thanks to Karen, I'm working. I manage the housing element of a nonprofit that when foster kids turn 18, they age out of traditional foster care. And who knows an 18-year-old that's ready to go out on their own? They're not ready. So we provide this transitional housing program for kids between 18 and 21. We have apartments from the San Fernando Valley, Santa Clarita, up to Lancaster. And that's the part of the job I do. And that's the technical part of the job. But I get to work with the most wonderful people that are social workers, that are loving, caring people. And I get to work a little bit with the youth and try to encourage them. And I get to use the gifts that God has given me in a job I would have never thought I would have, never saw myself in. Let the Lord move you where your talents lie. He's given every one of you talents. He's given every one of you skills. Go there. Go there. See what your talents are. If you have a natural inclination for something, that may be exactly what God is trying to tell you to do. But don't be afraid to step out of the box and go in a different direction, because you never know where you can use what God has given you to use, even though it seems an odd placing. Keep God first, but remember the Lord. It is he who, excuse me, it's he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. If you've got money, great. If you're using it for his purposes, that's even better. But always remember, it's the Lord that gives you that ability. I have some ability in project management because that's the field I come out of. The Lord gave me that, and I use that in my current job. Whatever you're doing, paid, unpaid, Mary is great at hospitality. If you've ever been to Mary's house for dinner or for a Super Bowl game, I've only been there for about 25 Super Bowls with Mary. Mary knows hospitality inside out. She knows how to be a gracious host. You feel relaxed. You feel at home. And that's what she's doing here. She's using the gifts God has given her to work on hospitality for here at the church. Amen. And many others of you are doing things here at the church too. I am just picking on Mary. But, you know, remember, it's God that gives you these talents to produce wealth. And not just wealth, but to produce good things. If you're at a church, if you're in a job, whatever you're doing, God's giving that to you. Okay? God first. Servants do what you're told by earthly masters, and don't just do the minimum that will get you by. Do your best. Work from the heart for your real master, for God. Let's not forget that. Whatever, if you're sweeping floors at McDonald's, if you're doing the accounting for one of the biggest accounting firms in the world, if you're an airline pilot, if you're a nurse, if you're a doctor, if you're stocking shelves at a supermarket, yeah, you're getting a paycheck from Walmart maybe, but Walmart's not really, as a Christian, who you're working for. You're working for God. You're working for the Lord. For God, confident that you will get paid in full when you come into your inheritance. Keep in mind, because you get your paycheck from Walmart maybe, but in heaven, we're going to get something much better from the Lord, and he's going to look at the type of work we did and how we did it. Keep in mind, always, the ultimate master you're serving is Christ. The sullen servant who does shoddy work and isn't responsible. Look, nothing is worse than a Christian in a job. You ruin your testimony immediately if you do a bad job, or if you think being a Christian means you can just get by at the job. You know, people are watching us. As soon as they know you're one of those Christians, as soon as they're aware that you think that you're a follower of Christ, they're watching you. Do the best job possible, always, because otherwise, it's a reflection on Christ. It's a reflection on your faith. It's a reflection on your church, not just on you. And being a Christian doesn't cover that up. You know, you don't get to get away. You don't get a freebie, because I'm a Christian. Even when you work with other Christians, sometimes people think, oh, well, you know, my boss is a Christian. I can get away with this. Don't do that. I hope I don't do that. Don't do that, because it's going to reflect poorly on you. Be productive. Hard work always pays off. Mere talk puts no bread on the table. That's a good proverb. Hard work always pays off. You know, you see a lot of people that talk a good game, but they don't have anything to show for it. Better to put your nose to the grindstone and do some hard work. I like this. Planning your spending. This is what has gotten me through some thin years here. Not always. I mean, I'm up here. I feel like King Henry VIII, who had six wives. I feel like King Henry VIII preaching on marriage. Okay. He probably wouldn't be the best guy to preach on marriage. I'm preaching on finances. I'm doing what I can, but believe me, I don't have the answer to everything. Planning your spending tells your money where you want it to go instead of wondering where it went. I think we've all been there, haven't we? Especially when you're younger. You're like, I had that money. Cash back is the most dangerous thing I've ever think was invented. You get cash back, you know, you go into every store today and they go, hey, do you want some cash back? You know what? They take that out of your account. Yeah, yeah. It comes out of their cash register, but it comes out of your account. You know, I think some people don't realize that. And I think they tie a string to it because, you know, I got 20 back from Trader Joe's. I've got $2. Where'd it go? Be careful with cash back, you know, and I like that. You want to tell your money where you want it to go instead of wondering where it went. Because, boy, it goes quick. Keep good records. Budget. Use cash. I haven't used a credit card in years. I use an ATM card. That's the same as cash, really. But using cash, they have proven that people spend 10 to 20, and some things I read even said up to 30 or 40% people spend less when they're using cash. And here's one of the reasons. When you spend plastic, it sounds crazy. If Chris here is the clerk, and I say, oh, I'll pay for it, and I give this to him, what happens a second later? He gives it back. You don't feel like you're out anything. But if you go into a store and you spend cash and you say, okay, I'll pay for that, you give it to him, you don't get it back. It has a big psychological, except this time I do get it back. Hey, wait a second, I gave you a 20. gotta watch this guy. It's psychological, but, you know, you put that plastic and you get it right back. You think, oh, I didn't really spend anything, but you hand the money and you don't get anything back. It's a good way to limit your spending. I've had to learn that, too. The prudent, this is another proverb, the prudent see danger and take refuge, but the simple keep going and pay the penalty. Just be careful with your spending. See the danger around the corner of spending too much. Save a little bit. You know, you got to save a little bit. But if you just keep going foolishly, you're going to pay the penalty. And I've had some of that in my life, too. Yeah. Okay. Save, invest, and grow your resources. Think of money like an edible plant. When you get paid, you get 10 plants. If you spend all those plants, you don't have anything left. But if you put one in the ground and you grow your tomatoes or something, you're going to have a lot more to invest. Do that. Wealth one quickly dwindles away, but gathered little by little, it grows. No bigger proof of that than a study of lotto winners. Many people who've won multiple millions are in debt a few years later. They've even borrowed against their future payouts on their lotto. It's not good. Money earned little by little is more likely to grow and last. The lottery isn't the best way to do it. Some debt's probably unavoidable, you know, for a home or something that grows. That's fine. Deal with debt. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender. You all know that if you owe money. You got to pay the lender first. You're their slave. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another, for whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. Okay, stay out of debt. Warren Buffett. You know who Warren Buffett is? He's worth between $500 and $600 billion, probably enough to get by with. He lives very simply, by the way. For the most part, he lives very simply. He says, my one specific piece of advice for people is, he basically says, forget credit cards. He says, you can't make progress in your financial life borrowing at 18 to 20%. You can make a lot of money lending at that rate, but you can't make progress. So if you want to be content, don't use credit cards. Enjoy what you have. You know, you can have very little, but you can really enjoy it, like Porgy in that song. He's enjoying what he has. He's got the stars and the moon and the ocean out in front of him. Enjoy what you have. Give generously. Give generously. Even if you have little. I'll tell you something. When I worked for Hilton in Anaheim, a long time ago, for a short time, I managed the laundry. Big laundry. 42 full-time employees just in the laundry. 18,000 pounds of linen on average a day. Largest hotel in Southern California. Occasionally, we'd have a need to do some fundraising for something. Maybe a child was sick of one of the employees or something happened and we would do fundraising. Laundry employees got paid the least in the hotel, paid less than anybody. Maids got tips when they made up rooms. Laundry employees don't get that. Other front desk employees, even bellmen, doormen, everything, they got tipped. The lowest rung in the hotel was the laundry. But consistently, when we had fundraising, the laundry gave the most money per employee. It's not about having a lot. Those who had a lot were trying to keep it. These people knew what it was to not have money and to have want and to have need. That's why they were so willing to help somebody get out of that situation. Be giving. Be rich in good deeds and be generous and willing to share. Okay. Let me go real quick. You all have a handout there in your bulletin on steps to save money. And I have one here somewhere too. Where it is at the moment, I have no idea. There we go. This is just a short list. It's not an exhaustive list by any means, but just some ways to be content, save money, cook at home. It's expensive to eat out. Cook soup, stews, pastas, and make, as Karen reminded me, make coffee at home. I know people who don't know you can do that. They think it has to come from Starbucks. You know? Oh, but you can actually make coffee at home. It's not that hard. You know, just give it a try. You can make Starbucks coffee at home. You can. You can buy the Starbucks coffee. But I bet if you bought something cheaper and put it in your coffee maker 9 out of 10 times after you put 14 creams and 3 sugars and whatever else in, you can't tell what it is anyway. So, you know, thrift stores. Go to Savers, go to Salvation Army, go to Goodwill. If you're saving money and you think, oh, I don't need to shop at those places, take the money you save and give it to missions or the church or something. Let me tell you something. I've had clothes from Saks Fifth Avenue. I've had clothes from Neiman Marcus, or Needless Markup, as we call it. Needless Markup. For some reason, our family always had matching pajamas because we thought we were Leave It to Beaver or something. You know, we always had matching pajamas from Neiman Marcus once a year, every couple years. Let me tell you something. And I always have a show and tell thing, you know. I want to show you today's ensemble, by the way. This wonderful outfit that, you know, I should do the runway thing here. These pants and this shirt are from Savers. Both were less than, not together, but each one was less than $10. These are real Dockers. This is a real name brand shirt. I have a couple Tommy Bahama shirts that look brand new from Savers, and you pay $50 to $150 for a Tommy Bahama shirt. Why pay that? You know, no one's ever come up to me and go, did you get that at Savers? You know? And if you're worried, just go late when your friends won't be there. Okay? And they have all the sizes right and everything. There's nothing wrong with going. Recycle, take advantage of it. A few aluminum cans or plastic bottles can pay for a meal. And there has been days when I've taken my cans to get a few dollars so I could eat. You know, that I do it. And if you don't need the money, collect your aluminum cans and bottles anyway and turn them in and then give the money to the church or something. At my previous church, there was a gentleman who for years collected everybody's aluminum cans and bottles, George Works, and gave it to the missions of the church. You know, that's money. get some exercise, get out and walk around, see what's within walking distance. You'll save some gas money, and you'll burn some calories. Go walk down the street. Almost every place has some place you can walk to, you know. Shop the supermarket discount shelf. Every supermarket, Ralph's to anything, even Bristol Farms, they have a discount shelf. It's usually in the back. The stuff on that shelf is just as good as anywhere else. What do you care if there's a dent in the box of Cheerios? You know, a broken Cheerio isn't going to hurt anybody. Shop the discount shelves and look for the store sales. Do that. Grow your own vegetables and stuff. Even a pot on the patio. We used to grow a lot of tomatoes. Store-bought tomatoes aren't very good anyway. Grow some tomatoes, you save money, and you have a good tomato. Use the coupons, join the store club. Go to farmer's market, especially toward the end of the evening, because sometimes those prices go way down. If you go up, they don't want to pack it up and take it back. You know, they want to get rid of it. Do that. Okay. Here's the big one that drives me crazy with a lot of my friends. Don't fear leftovers or the proverbial doggy bag. Let them think it's for your dog. Take it home and eat it. Leftovers are great. In fact, many things like pasta sauce and meatloaf taste better the next day. You know that's true. Any Italians in here? That spaghetti sauce is better the next day. Okay. Don't be afraid to make a large quantity of food and eat it over the next few days. I was great at taking a big thing of making a lot of macaroni and cheese and making 47 different meals out of it by the time I was done. And when you only have a little bit, this sounds crazy, because I've already put the salsa in it, and I've already put the vegetables in it. You just have a little bit. Scramble it with some eggs and other stuff. A macaroni and cheese omelet. Sounds crazy, but it's a good thing. Don't throw anything out. You can use it, add it to something. Just do it. Have fun. Have friends over and eat and have them bring something. You do that with other friends. That's a good way to, you know, if you've got several friends and you know, maybe you can afford this and they can afford that. Put it all together. Attend store grand openings. They're always giving something away. You know, the In-N-Out up here on Atlantic and Huntington, I was their first drive-through customer. Years ago, I got free food and I got free T-shirts too. Okay. Hey, last but not least, you want to be content. If you really think you need something, try this. This is actually, I wrote down, try a 30-day challenge. Sometimes it's been 60, 90 days or more for me. You think you need something, put it on a list, write the date down. I really need that new big screen, 347-inch TV in my 10x5 den. Write it down. If you still need it 30 days later, okay. But chances are you're not going to need it 30 days later. That's a good way to stay content. And just remember, contentment is learned. You have to learn to be content. Go through scripture, pray, and God's going to give you that. God's going to give you that contentment, I guarantee you.